Military ships weren't subject to dock authorities, except, of course, in the matter of arrivals and departures. And the relationship between the two usually involved some contempt on one side and mild resentment on the other, all covered over with guarded courtesy. But Skyot Auer had never been given to resentment, and besides, she knew both sides of the game. Had Captain Vell offended her personally? Did she merely dislike her, as happened sometimes? Or did her sympathies place her on the other side of some political dividing line? And after all, where was Skyot Auer likely to fall in a divided Rotch? Unless something had happened to change her personality and opinions drastically, I thought I knew where Skyot Auer would land in that toss. Captain Vell, and for that matter Mercy of Collar, I didn't know well enough to say. As for Saevarden, I was under no illusions as to where her sympathies would lie, given a choice between citizens who kept their proper places along with an expanding, conquering Rotch, or no more annexations and the elevation of citizens with the wrong accents and antecedents. I was under no illusions as to what Saevarden's opinion of Lieutenant Onn would have been, had they ever met. The place where Captain Vell customarily took tea wasn't prominently marked. It didn't need to be. It was probably not at the very top of fashion and society. Not unless Osk's fortunes had soared in the last 20 years. But it was still the sort of place that if you didn't already know it was there, you were almost certainly not welcome. The place was dark, and the sound muffled. Rugs and hangings absorbed echoes or unwanted noises. Stepping in from the noisy corridor, it was as though I had suddenly put my hands over my ears. Groups of low chairs surrounded small tables. Captain Vell sat in one corner, flasks and bowls of tea and a half-empty tray of pastries on the table in front of her. The chairs were full, and an outer circle had been pulled around. They had been here for at least an hour. Saevarden had said to me before we left the room, blandly, still irritated, that of course I wouldn't want to rush out to tea. If she'd been in a better mood, she would have told me straight out that I should arrive late. It had been my own inclination even before she spoke, so I said nothing and let her have the satisfaction of thinking she'd influenced me, if she wished to have it. Captain Vell saw me and rose, bowing. "Ah, Breck Gyod. Or is it Gyod Breck?" I made my own bow in return, taking care that it was precisely as shallow as hers had been. In the Gerentate, we put our house names first. The Gerentate didn't have houses the way Radchai did, but it was the only term Radchai had for a name that indicated family relationship. But I'm not in the Gerentate at the moment. Gyod is my house name.
"You've already put it in the right order for us, then," Captain Vell said, falsely jovial. "Very thoughtful."
I couldn't see Saevarden, who stood behind me. I wondered briefly what expression was on her face, and also why Captain Vell had invited me here if her every interaction with me was going to be mildly insulting. Station was certainly watching me. It would see at least traces of my annoyance. Captain Vell wouldn't, and likely wouldn't care if she could have.
"And Captain Saevarden Vendai," Captain Vell continued, and made another bow, noticeably deeper than the one before. "An honor, sir, a distinct honor, do sit."
She gestured to chairs near her own, and two elegantly attired and bejeweled Radchai rose to make way for us, no complaint or expression of resentment apparent.
"Your pardon, Captain," said Saevarden, bland. The correctives from the day before had come off, and she looked very nearly what she had been 1,000 years ago, the wealthy and arrogant daughter of a highly placed house. In a moment she would sneer and say something sarcastic, I was sure, but she didn't. I no longer deserve the rank. I am the honored Brek's servant.
Slight stress on honored, as though Captain Vell might be ignorant of the appropriate courtesy title, and Savardin meant merely to politely and discreetly inform her.
And I thank you for the invitation she was good enough to convey to me.
There it was, a hint of disdain, though it was possible only someone who knew her well would hear it.
But I have duties to attend to. I've given you the afternoon off, citizen, I said before Captain Vell could answer. Spend it however you like.
No reaction from Savardin, and still I couldn't see her face. I took one of the seats cleared for us. A lieutenant had sat there previously, doubtless one of Captain Vell's officers. Though I saw more brown uniforms here than a small ship like Mercy of Collar could account for. The person next to me was a civilian in rose and azure, delicate satin gloves that suggested she never handled anything rougher or heavier than a bowl of tea, and an ostentatiously large brooch of woven and hammered gold wire set with sapphires. Not, I was sure, glass. Likely the design advertised whatever wealthy house she belonged to, but I didn't recognize it. She leaned toward me and said loudly, as Savardin took the seat opposite me,
How fortunate you must have thought yourself to find Savardin Vendai!
Fortunate, I repeated, carefully, as though the word were unfamiliar to me, leaning just slightly more heavily on my Gerontate accent, almost wishing the Radchai language concerned itself with gender so I could use it wrongly and sound even more foreign. Almost.
Is that the word for it?
I had guessed correctly why Captain Vell had approached me the way she had. Inspector Supervisor Skyot had done something similar, addressing Savardin even though she knew Savardin had come as my servant. Of course, the Inspector Supervisor had seen her mistake almost immediately. Across from me, Savardin was explaining to Captain Vell about the situation with her aptitudes. I was astonished at her icy calm, given I knew she'd been angry ever since I told her I'd intended to come. But this was, in some ways, her natural habitat. If the ship that had found her suspension pod had brought her somewhere like this, instead of a small provincial station, things would have gone very differently for her.
Ridiculous! Exclaimed Rose in Azure beside me, while Captain Vell poured a bowl of tea and offered it to Savardin. As though you were a child! As though no one knew what you were suited for! It used to be you could depend on officials to handle things properly!
Justly, rang the silent companion of that last word, beneficially. I did, citizen, lose my ship, Savardin said. Not your fault, Captain, protested another civilian somewhere behind me. Surely not. Everything that happens on my watch is my fault, citizen, answered Savardin.
Captain Vell gestured agreement.
Still, there shouldn't have been any question of you taking the tests again.
Savardin looked at her tea, looked over at me sitting empty-handed across from her, and set her bowl down on the table in front of her without drinking. Captain Vell poured a bowl and offered it to me, as though she hadn't noticed Savardin's gesture.
How do you find the Roch after 1,000 years, Captain? Asked someone behind me as I accepted the tea. Much changed?
Savardin didn't retrieve her own bowl.
Changed some. The same some. For the better or for the worse? I could hardly say, replied Savardin coolly.
How beautifully you speak, Captain Savardin, said someone else. So many young people these days are careless about their speech. It's lovely to hear someone speak with real refinement.
Savardin's lips quirked in what might be taken for appreciation of a compliment, but almost certainly wasn't.
These lower houses and provincials, with their accents and their slang, agreed Captain Vell. Really, my own ship, fine soldiers, but to hear them talk, You'd think they'd never gone to school.
Pure laziness, opined a lieutenant behind Savardin.
You don't have that with ancillaries, said someone, possibly another captain, behind me.
A lot of things you don't have with ancillaries, said someone else. A comment that might be taken two ways, but I was fairly sure I knew which way was meant. But that's not a safe topic.
Not safe? I asked, all innocence. Surely it isn't illegal here to complain about young people these days. How cruel! I had thought it a basic part of human nature, one of the few universally practiced human customs.
And surely, added Savardin with a slight sneer, her mask finally cracking, it's always safe to complain about lower houses and provincials.
You'd think,
said Rose and Azure beside me, mistaking Savardin's intent.
But we are sadly changed, Captain, from your day. It used to be you could depend on the aptitudes to send the right citizen to the right assignment. I can't fathom some of the decisions they make these days. And atheists given privileges.
She meant Valskians, who were, as a rule, not atheists, but exclusive monotheists. The difference was invisible to many Radchai.
And human soldiers. People nowadays are squeamish about ancillaries, but you don't see ancillaries drunk and puking on the concourse.
Savardin made a sympathetic noise.
I've never known officers to be puking drunk. In your day, maybe not, answered someone behind me. Things have changed.
Rose and Azure tipped her head toward Captain Vell, who, to judge by her expression, had finally understood Savardin's words, as Rose and Azure hadn't.
Not to say, Captain, that you don't keep your ship in order, but you wouldn't have to keep ancillaries in order, would you?
Captain Vell waved the point away with an empty hand, her bowl of tea in the other.
That's command, citizen. It's just my job. But there are more serious issues. You can't fill troop carriers with humans. The human-crewed justices are all half empty.
And of course, interjected Rose and Azure, those all have to be paid.
Captain Vell gestured assent. They being, of course, Anandermi and I.
No one would name her while being critical of her. That our borders are proper as they are. I don't pretend to understand policy or politics, but it seems to me it's less wasteful to store ancillaries than it is to train and pay humans and rotate them in and out of storage.
They say,
said Rose and Azure beside me, taking a pastry from the table in front of her,
that if it hadn't been for Justice of Torin's disappearance, they'd have scrapped one of the other carriers by now.
My surprise at hearing my own name couldn't have been visible to anyone here, but surely Station could see it. And that surprise, that startlement, wasn't something that would fit into the identity I'd constructed. Station would be reevaluating me, I was sure. So would Anandermi and I.
Ah, said a civilian behind me, but our visitor here is doubtless glad to hear our borders are fixed.
I barely turned my head to answer. The Gerentate would be a very large mouthful. I kept my voice even. No one here could see my continuing consternation at that startlement moments ago. Except, of course, Station, and Anandermi and I. And Anandermi and I, or part of her at least, would have very good reasons for noticing talk about Justice of Torin and reactions to it.
I don't know, Captain Savardin, Captain Vell was saying, if you've heard about the mutiny at Ime. An entire unit refused their orders and defected to an alien power.
Certainly wouldn't have happened on an ancillary crewed ship, said someone behind Savardin.
Not too big a mouthful for the Roch, I imagine, said the person behind me.
I dare say, again I leaned just slightly on my Gerentate accent, Sharing a border with us this long, you've learned better table manners.